In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Good morning, everybody. It's fathers and dear brothers and sisters, it's a joy to be with everybody today. I want to begin the sermon this is truly a disclaimer. Some of the thoughts I'm going to share, I've shared with some of you as individuals, I've shared in groups, so this sermon, I'm not singling out anyone in this sermon. In fact, maybe perhaps I'm singling out myself, because my best sermons are really, I hope this is a good sermon, and my best sermons are really preaching to me. And so with that in mind, I wanted to begin with an analogy that might turn some of you off, but please hang in there, because some people don't like sports analogies. But we're all familiar, I hope, at least somewhat, with the role that weight training has played in sports in recent years. Let's consider football, for instance, American football, not Real Madrid versus Manchester United, which I guess happens this Sunday. That's a sport, right, Father?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll catch you. All right. So imagine now a modern football team, high school, college, pros for sure, people spend a lot of time in the weight room and getting big and strong, but they do that so they can go out on the football field and win. If you have a team that doesn't go to the weight room, they're not going to win a lot of games. But the whole point of being on a football team is not just to go in the weight room and get big and strong. You're actually supposed to go and play football. The two fit together. And that's kind of the way it is with Christianity, right? I mean, we are supposed to have faith and works. That's been a debate in the church since the days of the New Testament. We are supposed to focus on our godly interior aspect and then do something about it and go out into the world. Now, this should make perfect sense to us as we are here today to commemorate the feast of the prophet Elias, because he is a man who is both known for his great faith and his works. He's an ascetic. He has a personal encounter with God. He departs this life in a chariot. I mean, a chariot of fire. How much more godly could you be? But he's also someone who multiplies food, who raises the dead, who holds back the rain, who casts down fire. So he is a man of faith and a man of action. They fit perfectly together, as they should, in the Christian walk. And I point all of this out because I've observed, and I'll pick on the Orthodox Church since I'm Orthodox, in the Orthodox Church, especially quite recently, it's become very popular for people to focus only on the interior, ascetic, a spiritual side of life, and kind of think that, well, if we do that, everything will take care of itself. And how often have I heard people say, and I love this quotation, the quotation of St. Seraphim of Sarov, acquire inner peace and thousands around you will be saved. True, but the point is we are acquiring inner peace by the grace of God so that we can then do something with it and bring that inner peace into the world. It's really not sufficient for us just to rest on our inner peace and expect for God to do the rest. Now, it would be easy for us to be hyper-self-critical about this behavior were it not for the fact that somebody, a 20th century saint, actually wrote about this phenomenon. And we celebrate her feast today, too. We think about Prophet Elias because we're here, but this is the feast of Mother Mary of Paris, or Saint Maria Skopsova, who has a very interesting life. I encourage you just to go on the GoArch website and read her life. You can buy her book and read the whole book. But she ended her life in Paris as a Russian Orthodox nun doing philanthropic work. This is during World War II. And she was martyred in a concentration camp. But in one of her writings, she talks about religious attention to detail. Religious, we would call it fundamentalism in our own era. And she says that when a religion feels persecuted, that they kind of go into a survival mode, and they want to preserve everything just so that when the persecution ends, they'll have something good to pass on to their children. She illustrates that with the Pharisees of Jesus' time, how they paid attention to all the minutiae because they were an oppressed people. They were under Roman occupation, and then one day, God willing, they would not be under Roman occupation, would not have to have this attention to detail. And she does this as a Russian Orthodox woman in a way, if you will, of explaining slash critiquing her own people, because the Russian Orthodox post-communism became very, very, very focused on every minute detail of the faith and preserving it. And this is her way of both explaining it and perhaps gently chiding her compatriots as well. And so if we would consider ourselves a church under oppression, then the only thing really left for us to do is to pull back inside of ourselves and to preserve what we have, to work on our spiritual life, our inner life only, and to make sure we do everything just so, do all the matanyas just right and everything, so that one day we would be free again. And I think sometimes we feel this way as Christians living in the West, and I don't mean the Western United States, I mean the Western world, and certainly as Orthodox Christians, we can feel that way, but we shouldn't. We know that we have the truth. We know that we live in a country that allows free religious expression. So anytime you and I feel as though we are somehow being oppressed, that's internally driven. There's no reason for us to retreat inside of ourselves. We are not the Pharisees living under Roman occupation, nor are we the Russian Orthodox Church living under the Soviet Union. We are free here in America. So now the question becomes, how then can we break out of this mentality where we somehow separate going out into the world and doing things from developing our interior life? How can we bring them together? And the answer I would propose is based on something I've been reading recently in a book of God's. It's a collection of essays and speeches by Archbishop Anastasios in Albania. The way we would challenge ourselves to bring together this idea of going out into the world and of keeping track of our interior life is just by remembering one line in the Creed, where we say what? I believe in one holy, Catholic, and apostolic church. I believe in one church. And what does that mean? Well, it means ultimately we believe that all Christians should be one. It's true. That's part of God's plan. I don't know that any of us have a handle on that. It theoretically means that we Orthodox should be one. We certainly are one with regard to theology, but most of us know that the actual dream of pan-Orthodoxy is kind of like using a jar to catch smoke. Only nowadays we're in a hurricane trying to catch the smoke in a jar. But that type of unity may or may not be within my grasp, but other unity is. What about the unity just within us as mainly we're Greek Orthodox here? If you're not Greek Orthodox, forgive me, but the Greek Orthodox who live in this region. And so we have feast days in our churches, and assuming you're not doing a wedding on that day or have something, a funeral or whatever else, we should be there to support each other. I mean, and I'm so glad the church is full and so many people have come from different churches, including and especially Holy Trinity, to show the unity of our church. We are one church. Because, you know, as Archbishop Anastasios says, you know, it's not the church of Romania, the church of Greece, the church, it's the church in Romania, it's the church in Greece. And it's the same thing here. It's the church in Santa Cruz, the church in San Francisco, the church in Vallejo, the church in San Jose, the church in Carmel, and sometimes Salinas, and sometimes Monterey, but mainly Carmel. Right? And so that's how it's supposed to be. We should be one, and we should work at that. And if we can't visibly manifest unity just among Greek or Orthodox in one small region of the world, how can we then point the fingers at anybody else and say, pan-Orthodox, you should be better. There should be more Christian unity. We need to work on unity there. And then at the parish level, it becomes incredibly important for us to maintain unity. And we all know that because all of us here are parishioners. I look around and essentially everybody here is involved intimately in his or her parish. And on that subject of unity, I would simply say this. Every time you and I gossip, and I say you and I, everybody is guilty of gossip, every time we gossip, we rupture the unity of the church. And so if we want to do one thing to really make sure that I believe in one church, then I believe that we shouldn't gossip and say godly things, especially when it concerns the church. So we say, I believe, right, in one church. What else? What other kind of church? A holy church. I believe in a holy church. And holiness means set aside. It means being special. It means that people can encounter us and know there's something different about us. And you don't go off and make a holy church. You can't found a holy church. You can't have a do-over where you make your church more holy. Holiness comes from each one of us. And I look at myself and I judge myself harshly, and I want to be more holy. And God willing, that is a commitment that all of us are making, to be more holy, because that holiness then manifests the light of Christ to other people. It changes our churches, and then it becomes attractive to the world around us. So if we say it, we should live it. I believe in a holy church. What about Catholic? Catholic means for all people everywhere. That is the church's calling, to be for all people everywhere. And we shouldn't be ashamed to go out and live that way. Archbishop Anastasios talks about this. He goes, Jesus walked among people of different religions. It was fine. He preached the truth. The apostles went out into a world filled with people with different religions. It's okay. They lived in their faith, and we should too. Yes, I know we live in this strange world where they'll say, Father, could you do a prayer before the football game, but don't mention God? But really, as we live, we should. But why not be a Christian? I'm not ashamed of being a Christian. And it doesn't mean if I encounter somebody who's another religion or an atheist, it doesn't mean that I think less of them. Be proud of our Christianity. Be bold in our Christianity. Live it. Because we say that, right? I believe in a Catholic church. That means it's a church for all people. And so all people should be able to know about the good news. But then it says what? I believe in an apostolic church. I believe in an apostolic church. And that doesn't just mean that we have this apostolic succession where we can trace all of our ordinations back to the apostles, but it means we're supposed to live like apostles. And that means being sent out into the world. Archbishop Anastasios points out that prior to the resurrection, during Jesus' earthly ministry, the apostles were told to just go to preach to their own people. They were told that by Jesus specifically. Don't go anywhere else. Just go to the people of Israel. He told them that. That was before the resurrection. After the resurrection, the game changes. Go therefore make disciples of all nations. The event of Pentecost. The tables are turned now on the apostles. They are called to go out into the world. And Archbishop Anastasios would even say that people who deny that are actually denying the resurrection. They're living in a pre-resurrectional period. So if you're saying, yeah, my job is just to sit in my church and be my church and work on my holiness and never go out into the world, you're living in a pre-resurrectional state. And that's not my words, that's Archbishop Anastasios. I agree with him. Now, how we go out into the world is a subject of days and days of dialogue and discussion. Quite frankly, it's different for every church and every setting. But we say, I believe what I believe in an apostolic church. It means that we should be doing our own thing in our own way, to be going out into the world to bring the light of Christ into the world. So, on this feast day of the prophet Elias, a man of God and godliness, and a man of action, isn't it a good thing then for us to recommit ourselves to being people of God, and then people of action? And every time we come here to liturgy, we can be reminded of that call to be people of God and people of action, right? Because every time I come into liturgy, I can be reminded what? That I should be absolutely committed to being one church and doing all of those things that build up the unity of the church. That I should absolutely be striving for my own holiness by the grace of God, to be more and more set apart from the filth of this world, to be more and more committed to Christ. I should be willing to make the sacrifices, yes, the sacrifices sometimes, of being a Catholic church, a church for all people. And yes, be willing to live my Christianity in front of others so that other people can know about Jesus. And yes, every time I read the Creed, I should be able to know that I am absolutely called to be an apostle and to bring the light of Christ into the world. That's what it says in the creed, and that's how we should live. Is it possible? I believe so.